Hello and welcome everybody to this week's Football Fans Podcast. This is the podcast that gives real football fans a real voice. You know, there's no fence sitting on this show, no ums, no ahs, no dithering, none of that nonsense. We give it to you real and raw on the FFP.
I think he's gone, to be honest. I think it's his last season. Whether or not they win the cup, I think Martinez will be gone.
By the second goal, I compared it to, you know, getting home, you know, going upstairs and finding your wife in bed with Anthony Joshua. You know, you'd be filled with rage, but you can't do shit. You know what I mean? You just got to look at it and take it.
Semi-pro at best sometimes. It's shocking. His finishing is erratic at best. I don't know how he gets anywhere near the England squad. I think it's a damning indictment on English football that he's got caps.
My name is Jordan. I'm your host on this Football Fans Podcast. Thank you very much once again for joining in on the fun. Don't forget to subscribe for free via the iTunes library, Football Fans Podcast. Check us out on the SoundCloud, also Football Fans Podcast. Tell your friends, share, and show some love. Let's get into my panel for this week. Season is slowly coming to a close now. Gabriel, our Chelsea fan, is here. We have returning United fan Marvin. Where you been, Marv?
I've just been working, Jordan.
People have been saying that you've been like just
nobody's been
season.
Saying that. And if
okay,
they do,
okay, I've been saying that.
Give them my number and tell them to come to me. I don't hide. Don't imply that before I've even started. I'm here.
You're here.
Simple as that. And it's where's Ollie? Ollie, where are you, bro? We need to talk.
It's good to have you back anyway. And we have making his debut, another debutant on the pod, another Spurs debutant making his FFP. Ranty, how you doing, sir?
I'm really well. Thank you for having me.
How do we know each other? Tell everyone a little bit about what you do and the show that you do online.
All right. So I think our first encounter was on Twitter. I invited you to our Footy Says podcast, which I contribute to. You can follow us at Footy Says. Mm-hmm. Jordan's a very, very passionate Arsenal fan, even though sometimes he does go off the ball, but what
most
Arsenal
of the
fan
time.
Doesn't. What Arsenal fan doesn't. But yeah, we do. We've got a Facebook account as well that you can like. Like I said, follow us on Twitter. We're very much open to interacting with our followers, mm-hmm. getting your opinions, and we'll share opinions with you as well. And I'm looking forward to the show.
And it's very similar to the FFP, everyone. So yep. Check out the Footy Says podcast as well for some honest and upfront views too. All right, let's get into this week's drive-bys. Going to start with you, Marvin. if Klopp somehow managed to navigate his way through the two-legged tie over Dortmund and get to, say, the final of the Europa League in the summer, brings in his own players, will they be the team to really fear next season? Basically, will Klopp be this year's Poch?
Joe, why are you asking me Liverpool?
I'm asking you because I know how you feel about Klopp. And I think you've got a good draw against
what
Dortmund.
What I'll say is, right, you know how I feel about the Europa.
I do.
Yeah. So the only Europa games I watch were unfortunately the Liverpool ones, because you know how much I hate Liverpool. So it's a double whammy. I hate the Europa. I hate Liverpool. That being said, although I didn't watch the Spurs games, what everybody told me is Dortmund destroyed them, right? Absolutely obliterated them. And it was probably the worst beatings they got this season, right?
That's correct.
That being said, I wanted to see this fantastic Dortmund that everybody was talking about. So I tuned in to the Dortmund-Liverpool game. And I don't know where I level out here, whether it was, you know, the Klopp return factor or what it was, but Liverpool gave a really good account of themselves. They stifled Dortmund quite a bit. And I actually thought they were the better of the two teams. I'm still hoping and praying that they go to Anfield and school them, right? I'm really, you know, I couldn't think of a worse sort of situation than United not finishing Champions League, albeit a lesser competition, Liverpool lifting some silverware. Do you know what I mean?
And then by virtue getting Champions League.
And then by virtue getting Champions League. I mean, we know Chelsea aren't going to get Champions League, but you don't want to be that one person.
left in the cupboard.
You don't want to be, you know.
Thanks for pointing that out.
You know, like musical chairs, like everybody, you're the one standing in the Chelsea dweeb in the corner. You don't want to be that team. And that's where you could be, because in my mind, I'm thinking at least we're above Liverpool. It could all go wrong. That being said, I mean, this next season is the biggest anomaly that I think. I know it's been the biggest anomaly with Leicester looking like they're going to win it. But next season, there is so much that has to happen, right? We're talking a new manager at Chelsea. As you've said, Klopp will have a pre-season to drill these guys, bring his own players in and get the fitness up, because he's all about the press, right? And he's going to have time to get... A, he'll have the time to get the people he wants to keep up to scratch. B, bring in his own people. And C, I think he'll have no problem in cutting people that he doesn't think are up to the Liverpool style of play, right? So I think they are going to be a real threat, but I don't think you can negate the fact that I think Chelsea will come again. I think that Spurs have some momentum that I believe they'll be able to carry on regardless of Champions League. And I think you've talked a few times on the pod about these up and comings, and I'm not really just talking about Leicester, I'm talking about the likes of West Ham, etc. So it's just going to be an exciting season. There's a lot of managerial changes, but you know, it's Liverpool. I hate them. I wish them nothing more than the worst. And I'm hoping that, I mean, we had a conversation about Klopp and I wasn't impressed with Klopp early doors, and to be fair, I'm still not there, but you can't take away the fact that, you know, he's looking like he might lift the Europa Cup this season.
It's a possibility. All right. Aranti.
Yes, sir.
Should the stench of match fixing surrounding Conte be a concern for Chelsea supporters? And I must state that he's not been accused of match fixing. The accusation, as I'm aware, is that he didn't report match
someone
fixing.
Someone told him, apparently.
And he didn't report that.
Yeah.
Should that they're bringing in a guy that's kind of coming in with a little bit of negative baggage. Should that be a concern, or would that just be dealt with over the summer and they can move forward, do you think?
For me personally, I don't think it should be that big of an issue for Chelsea moving forward, especially given their problems that they've had to deal with this season. I mean, their biggest concern is, you know, being the worst champion defenders in Premier League history.
It's
a fact, to be fair.
No, it is a fact.
It's a fact.
It wasn't a dig. It was just a fact.
Obvious, man.
Yeah. But I think...
Do you want to dispute that?
Good luck with that. If you think, no, okay.
I think... yeah, so right. I think given Conte's track record, Chelsea have got themselves a really, really good manager. He's obviously somebody who's not going to take any rubbish. I think the likes of... Eden Hazard and those players who think they can just get away with whatever they want to are going to have a huge wake-up call if they're still in the summer. Conte, I expect to make some shrewd signings. I expect Hazard to still be there. A lot of people still think Hazard might go off, but I think personally, if Conte can keep Hazard on a level playing field, on a level ground, then you will get another good season out of Hazard. So I don't think the match fixing will be that much of a big deal or that much of a concern for Chelsea fans. I think they'll be very much focused on going back to challenging for the title and being a team that we know that Chelsea can be. I also think that if they can also make the right signings in the summer, they will definitely challenge for the title next season. So I don't think whatever's happened in the past is going to come back and haunt them.
All right, cool. Watford. Who do you think is more important at Watford, Troy Deeney or Ighalo? Who's the more important player of the two?
I'd say Troy Deeney. If you ask me why, he's the club captain. I think he's a good influence on the team overall. I think Ighalo, if you look at his form quite recently, is tailed off a bit. And I think you get that a bit with strikers or finishers. People start to kind of work you out a bit, and you know, there's only so many times you could do the Iggy chop and it's going to come off. So now for me, I think overall Troy Deeney is probably more important at the club overall. Although I would say that possibly you could argue that Ighalo is a better finisher and maybe more talented overall as well. But I'd say Troy Deeney is more important.
Okay. We're not going to talk too much about some of the teams in the bottom half of the league this week, solely because that'll be focused more on next week, because I think we'll have an idea then of who's going down. Villa will be officially down. So we're going to any fans of teams in the bottom half, we've not forgotten about you just for this week. Let's talk a little bit about Tottenham. It's your first time on the pod.
Yep.
Just a couple of questions for yourself.
Yeah,
again.
Sure.
Well, first time. Come on, everyone makes their debut. Give them a little time to work their team. We did it with you.
Have we ever had a pod without a Spurs fan?
Yeah, we have actually.
You're talking about, oh, give him the voice. It's too much voice, man.
It's his first voice. Run through it.
No, it's fine.
It's not an attack on you.
It's fine. It's
an attack on all of you.
I can't hear you from up here anyway.
Oh,
shots. Allow it.
Just bend down.
last 5 or 6 games to go left now of the season.
Yeah.
Is it gone, or do you still believe that there's a chance you could catch Leicester City?
I think it's gone. I think every fan knows it's gone. Me being a realistic Spurs fan, I've been very, very impressed with the manner in which we've gone about our games this season. And I was speaking to you about this earlier, Jordan. I think Pochettino has instilled a very strong mentality into this Spurs side. From the back right the way to the front, we have players who are fearless, players who are willing to respond during a bad spell. I think we've lost 4 games this Premier League season, and I think each game that we have lost this season, we have responded well. I mean, I watched the Leicester versus Sunderland game, and there was a false sense of hope on my part, but I did think Sunderland could force out a draw or maybe go on and beat Leicester, which they didn't, obviously. And when I saw 10 points between Leicester and Spurs, I thought to myself, you know what? We're not going to win this game. We're not going to win. The most we're going to get from this United game is probably a draw. And the 6 minutes that we absolutely ran riot against Manchester United was unbelievable. I think it epitomised everything that Spurs have been about this season. I think they gave us an early scare, Manchester United. They did try and play us at our own game, the high press and the high intensity. But obviously, it's not something that they're renowned for or have been renowned for under LVG. They've had problems of their own, and it was problems that we exploited, and we've done that throughout the course of the season. I think we've held our own, and I think the last 5 games that we go into, I think we've got Stoke next, we go to West Brom, and then we've got Southampton, Newcastle and Chelsea. I think Chelsea's after the West Brom game. I don't think we'll lose any of them, to be honest. I don't think we'll lose any of them. Whether we'll win all of them is another situation entirely. But I think, even though I don't think we're going to win the Premier League, I think what Poch has done, he sent out an encouraging sign to all Spurs fans to fret not for next season.
So you think that as a foundation, you don't think this is a once in a lifetime?
I don't.
A foundation.
I honestly don't.
You can go into next season.
I honestly don't. I think if you read a lot of what the players are saying, the collectivity of the team, the hard work and endeavour that is reflective of each game, players are coming out like Lamela, Vertonghen, saying that there's something special happening at Spurs. Yeah, it sounds very cliche, but for, you know, more than one player to come out and say it just goes to show that Pochettino is certainly doing something really, really positive at the club. I'm looking forward to next season. I think I'm looking forward to seeing how he gets the best out of our squad competing on all fronts, because I think if we're going to do as well as we've done this season, we definitely need to compete on all fronts. I don't think we can compromise one competition for the other like we have this season. I think it was a mistake initially to, you know, play weekend sign against a team like Borussia Dortmund, but Pochettino's renowned for that. I think he'd done the same against Arsenal in the Capital One Cup. He's done the same at Southampton in the FA Cup as well when he was there. But I think he's going to have to change that part of his game. I think he's going to have to change that part of his mentality as well.
Have a squad that can compete.
Yeah, we're going to have to have a squad that can compete on all fronts if we are going to be a threat to the likes of Manchester City, Manchester United, Liverpool and Arsenal and Chelsea, because there's a lot of teams who have fallen short this season, but they're going to look to rectify their problems next season, and Spurs need to be in and around it.
Sorry to cut you there. You mentioned your manager there. Do you feel you had United on Saturday?
Yeah.
I didn't actually see the quotes, but I heard in the post-match press conference, Louis van Gaal said something about he could have managed, or
So
do you think you dodged the bullet by not getting him, or do you feel that because the expectations of a club like United are bigger, he would have done well at Tottenham?
I think in hindsight, you can say that we dodged the bullet. But again, that's no disrespect to OBG. I just think the job at Manchester United was always going to be difficult for anybody who was going to try and replace Mr. Alex Ferguson.
Sir.
Yeah, go on.
No, it was Sir Alex.
Oh, right. Mr. Alex Ferguson.
Yeah, Fergie. Fergie to the United fans. Come on, Nick. Respect the Queen's Empire. Oh. That's all I'm asking.
Respect the Queen's Empire. But yeah, I mean, there's this notion that, you know, Fergie knew what he was doing when he appointed Moyes, and apparently he just didn't want anybody to take the mantle from him. I know Jose was linked with the United job, but that didn't happen. That didn't materialize. And I also know something happened with Pep as well. I know he was linked with the United job. But yeah, going off tangent a bit, back to Spurs. I think LVG would have been a decent enough appointment for Tottenham at the time, considering where we were. But I do think Levy did make the right decision, because he got a manager who had experience in the Premier League. He got a manager who takes charge of everything, not just on the pitch, but off the pitch as well.
Yeah.
One of my big problems with was Spurs and the way Levy handled managerial appointments is that he wouldn't allow his managers to do what they wanted to necessarily do within the transfer market. Now, from my own understanding, the Berahino deal was something that Poch was happy to let go. And I think that's epitomized everything that Poch is about this season. I mean, he is willing to work with what he has. I think we found that out with Eric Dier, who was centre back initially, and he's moved him into midfield, and he's producing some of the best performances he has in his Spurs career. And that's a testament to what Poch is about. I'm happy with Poch. I do think we have dodged the bullet with LVG. I think he will be gone come the summer. I think Jose will probably hold
that thought. Sorry. Yeah? You were there on Sunday's game. First of all, what did you make of Tottenham? Because you've seen them a couple of times this season, haven't you? What did you make of Tottenham? And I'm assuming you would happily swap managers right now.
It's one of those things, right? Because there isn't a Man United fan in the land that doesn't want LVG to go in the summer.
I know a few.
Right?
I know a few.
Right? Want him to stay. Well, they're idiots. Yeah? Yeah?
They are.
And Pochettino has done an outstanding job. But, I mean, for me, I mean, I was at the game. And it was 6 minutes of madness, right? I think the first half is pretty even Stevens. And I think, as sad as it sounds, when Mensah went off injured, who was playing right back that day, and Darmian came on, it all fell to pieces. In fact, I pretty much, as soon as Mensah went off, I think the first ball played was a cross-field ball by Kyle Walker into Darmian's zone, and he was beaten by Lamella, right? And I thought, oh God, when you're getting beaten in the air by Lamella, then you're in trouble. It was a terrible experience for me because I was sitting with the home fans, and somebody said to me, you know, how did you handle it? And I've sat with home fans before, you know, you've got to be respectful. You can't be cheering on your own team. But by the second goal, I compared it to, you know, getting home, you know, going upstairs and finding your wife in bed with Anthony Joshua. You know, you'd be filled with rage, but you can't do shit. You know what I mean? You just got to look at it and take it. It was awful. I was sitting on my hands watching a complete capitulation. And what I realised quite quickly is United have no characters, right? And I keep telling you, all I do nowadays is watch Premiership Gold and, you know, Football Years.
To reminisce.
With the times. Even flipping, I take a Nicky Butt right now, George. Do you know what I mean? So overall, you can't knock Spurs' performance. I don't think they played out of this world, but they got a really good result and they deserved the win at the end of the day. I mean, Lamella missed an absolute sitter in the first half, but overall, in the second half, they were clinical. And I think they exposed our frailties with people like Blind, who, you know, I've said a million times, people keep telling me, you know, Blind, this. He's not a centre-back. I've talked about it with United fans before. Damian has never recovered from the Arsenal game. Never. He looked superb for the first bit of the season. And then when Arsenal took him to school, he can't even shave properly. He's got like some...
he's
an absolute embarrassment. Ashley Young came on. and he played up front.
They can't.
He played up front. And for me, I really wanted to hurl abuse at him. People kept saying, why did Martial not go up front, blah, blah, blah. But when I saw the squad, right? I mean, we had no strikers on the bench, right? So it was always going to be Depay or Young to come off. It was just the fact it just looked stupid. And actually, Ashley Young, you know, he does what it says on the tin, right? If you put him on the wing, he'll get down the byline, he'll get across. I don't know why that wasn't the decision made. But, you know, the best of luck to Spurs. After Leicester, they're probably the most inoffensive team that could win it for me. As much as I know a lot of Spurs fans, mainly because I keep coming to this bloody pod. but, you know, I also walked past the pub, like the local Spurs pub, and I watched them all watching the Sunderland game. And I wasn't in the pub, but I know Jack Rodwell missed an absolute sitter.
Yeah.
And if you saw the rage in that pub, these guys really think they're still in the race, which is stupid but highly entertaining at the same time.
All right. Okay, that Spurs done. So...
thank God for that.
We'll see if they can catch Leicester, but yeah, I think we will highly doubt it. All right, let's start with you, Gabriel, on the first one. Let's talk a little bit about England, their strikers in particular,
because
it seems like that's the most exciting part of the England squad at the moment. Should England take 6 strikers to the Euros?
Nah.
And why not?
Well, because the squad would just be imbalanced. I'd take 4 strikers. And possibly I consider some of these striker wingers that you've got, like Walcott and Brickford or Welbeck, or whatever the name is.
Walcott, but even a player?
Brickford.
So for me...
I can't have that. I know you don't like Welbeck, but come on. Brickford is harsh.
Right. So for me, the strikers are... Yeah,
adjust what he's saying.
Yeah.
He's saying it's harsh.
It's not harsh.
Why isn't it?
He's got, his touch is semi-pro at best. Sometimes.
Who are we talking about here?
Danny Welbeck.
Semi-pro at best.
Semi-pro at best sometimes. It's shocking. His finishing is erratic at best. I don't know how he gets anywhere near the England squad. I think it's one of the... It's a damning indictment on English football that he's got caps. So yeah. Okay, Welbeck's cap out.
So
yeah.
You're
the strikers that I'm taking...
Give me your 4 to go.
I'm taking Rooney. I'm specifically saying him first because I took some criticism for saying that I'll put him in the squad. So I'm taking Rooney, I'm taking Vardy, I'm taking Danny Sturridge, and I'm taking Harry Kane.
So if you're the manager, we're going to do our England squad in the next couple of weeks. But
yeah.
What are you playing, 2 up front, or are you playing 1 up front and 3 behind?
I guess I'd rotate it for the games. But I guess if I had to play my strongest team, like in the final against the best teams, it would be 1 up front and a couple behind.
Okay, all right. Yeah. But 6 is too many for you.
Why take 6? If you're playing, most teams play 1 up top, and I'm presuming that we will play 1 up top. Mm. Why take 6 strikers? I know that there are a lot of strikers on good form. You know, Andy Carroll just banged a hat-trick over the weekend. There's questions about whether he should get in. Although after that ridiculous challenge he made on Koscielny, I'm just thinking, is he going to do something stupid like that in the World in the Euros as well? You know, people have put Troy Deeney in with a shout. I don't think he's going to... I don't think he's good enough, but he's had a good season. I think if I was to choose another striker, but after those 4,
Defoe,
my next one would be Defoe. It wouldn't be... Because at the end of the day, I think Defoe, as a finisher, after Kane and Sturridge, I don't think England have got better. And I'd even put him in the mix of Kane and Sturridge. You just can't do... He hasn't got the all-round game that those guys have got, I'd think finishing on his day, he could compete with those guys. So he would be my next choice. But those would be the 4 that I'd take.
So Marvin, Gabriel wouldn't take 6. I think there's 4 that are definite to go. Kane, Vardy, Rooney, and Welbeck, I think, are the 4 that are definite to go. They stay injury-free. Would you take 6? And he mentioned, Gabriel, there, that he probably wouldn't take Andy Carroll. does he not offer something different and very English and British that defenders on the continent don't like defending against?
First of all, Jude.
I knew this was coming.
Dude, you know what I'm like? I'm not just going to let things slide.
I'm with you on this one.
And you know what? When people, I encourage, if I say something you guys disagree with, call me out, because I'm always going to call you out.
Don't worry,
right?
I will.
But that Danny Welbeck comment was ridiculous. How he's getting capped. Look at his record for England. In qualifying, he was top scorer for the World Cup before. He scored like 6 goals in 5 games. The two he banged against Switzerland, who were a decent squad back then. To say you don't know how he's getting caps means you ain't watching, right?
Let me respond to that. Because Peter Crouch also had a great record. Yeah. And he's crap as well.
Yeah, if Peter Crouch has that record, he goes. The bottom line is, if you play well for England, why can't you go?
I think there's a clear difference between playing well in qualifying rounds and playing well in major tournaments.
What did they do in the tournament? I can't really say.
No one goes, because who does play well in major tournaments?
You can't say that because,
how do you know who's going to play well in a tournament? Okay. They happen every 2 to 4 years.
First and foremost, I wouldn't even say Arsenal have any strikers if you count Walcott and Welbeck. I would take Welbeck as a winger. I'll probably take Walcott as a winger as well. But if you're looking for players who are going to get you goals, Defoe is definitely a good shout. But you've got that in Sturridge. You've got that in Harry Kane. You've got that in Wayne Rooney. Rooney is a no-brainer. Rooney has to go. By default, Rooney has to go by default. And Gabriel said, you don't need to take that many strikers with you to France. You don't need to. A game will be dominated in the midfield, and you're most likely to always play one striker anyways. So if you've got a prolific striker up top, make sure you've got good players in and around them, and England already have that. So why do you need to take... I wouldn't classify Welbeck as a striker.
I think England do. So I'm going by England's definition.
That's supposedly his best position.
But you know what?
But his best position is on the flanks.
His best position is on the bench.
For me, I disagree. Like, for me, if I was Roy, and obviously I'm not, and he'll disagree with what I'm saying, but for me, and I'm going to eat humble pie here, Joe, because we've talked about Vardy, and I still don't rate him, right? I still don't. But for me, the only two people who should be guaranteed to get on the plane in a striking position are Vardy and Kane.
I agree.
Those are the only people who have proved fitness, who have got goals, who have really contributed. Everybody else, as far as I'm concerned, is an injury question mark. This Wayne Rooney thing frustrates me immensely, because Wayne Rooney will go with England on the fact that he is the captain and what he's done in the past. Isn't that enough, though? No. Because for me, you've got to pick people who are carrying a bit of form. You know what I mean?
Is Welbeck carrying form? I mean,
well, Welbeck's come back from injury and he's banging. He scored the winner against Leicester.
That was ages ago. We had the same question last time.
He scored against Everton 2 weeks ago. He's been playing very well.
Has he been playing well?
But he has.
I haven't seen that personally.
For me, those are the only two guaranteed. I wouldn't take Rooney, but Roy is scared of the media, right? You don't take Rooney. It doesn't go well. They'll say, you know, Vardy only had one good season. He hasn't taken enough experience up front. Sturridge, I love Sturridge when he is fit and he is playing, right? I would say he's probably the best between him and Kane for the best English striker. But his fitness is just too much of a question mark, right? And Theo wouldn't be anywhere near the squad for me. He just isn't doing it. I mean, Iwobi's keeping you out of the team and those sort of things.
I agree. The reason why I flagged up maybe six is because I think that the five we named, including Sturridge, I think will be the five that he definitely takes. I only brought in Carroll to the mix because, like I said, he offers something different and very British. And if we've learned anything, surely, from Leicester City this season, is that when you play the British values, which are direct, play to your strengths, Carroll epitomises that. You're not going to start with Andy Carroll. But with 15 minutes to go, you need a goal. They're not going to like that. They're not going to like that kind of striker. So should he not be considered?
Who would you say would go with England, who's a fantastic crosser of the ball?
True. Yeah. And
the way England, I think, will set up is probably one and then a three, right? And there will be people in there, as sad as it sounds, you know, I think Lallana will probably go, right? Barkley will be there. Dele Alli will be there. These guys aren't Stuart Downing-esque, you know, get to the byline and cross it in. I think Andy Carroll scored one hat-trick against an Arsenal backline that everybody knows is overrated, right? They are not great. And for me, every time I watch them and I see Koscielny on the floor holding his face, I just think about you and Natasha back in the day, how he used to lick his ass. And I think, I mean, this is Andy Carroll we're talking about, right? So for me, in order, I don't like it when people just jump on one game. If Andy Carroll bangs 3, 4, 5, 6 goals for the rest of the season and injuries don't go the right way, fair play. But in order to take him, you have to then adapt. You don't just you don't put Andy Carroll in and then just say, all right, guys, start crossing. It's a whole different, you might have to take a different lineup to come on with him and support him. And for me, he gives you that British style, but there's so much he doesn't give you. And fitness is also one of them that I just think it would be such a bold move. And I don't think Roy's got that in him. And I don't think he deserves it.
Okay. And George, one thing we've learned about going to tournaments, going and playing the British way usually means we lose. Whether we lose in the quarterfinals or semifinals, it usually means we lose.
I was going to go as far as saying this. I think the maximum strikers Hodgson should take is 4, for me personally. And I wouldn't even start Vardy. I would bring him on as an impact sub.
Yeah.
And that's just simply because of the likes of Harry Kane, who can hold the ball up, who can be the vocal point of an England team. You've got that in Rooney as well, which is why I would take him as well. I wouldn't necessarily start Rooney, but I would take him because of the experience that he brings and the sort of encouragement he can bring to the dressing room as well. Do you understand? But
I think my point to some other people I think gave a few weeks ago on Rooney was, people talk about the experience he brings.
Yeah.
He's only got negative experiences with England.
Not all. Not all
in
of them.
Apart from the first tournament where he was a raw kid, has he got any real positive experiences with England?
But listen, all right, pull it into perspective. If we're going by your reasoning before about the goals that Welbeck has scored and the goals that Walcott has scored as well. How many goals has Rooney scored for England?
No, but I'm taking Welbeck in the last month has been doing well.
Yeah,
Rooney's not been good all season.
But how long has Rooney been doing it for England?
That's my point. He has. Against Albania and Jamaica.
It's the same with Welbeck as well.
It's the same with Welbeck playing well now.
I don't think.
So if we're going based on form, then we're saying the likes of. So we're saying Welbeck has to go, basically. We're going based on form.
I'm saying I would pick
Welbeck. Do you play him as a striker?
Welbeck can beat a man. Welbeck is an aerial threat and he can score you a goal. Welbeck. Rooney ain't good in the air. Rooney ain't going to beat no one. Rooney's slow. He slows the plays down.
Welbeck can score you a goal. The thing about Rooney is that, like I said, he doesn't necessarily have to start. He just needs to be there for the experience that he brings. The same reason
join
I would bring
the coaching team.
Why not? Go there.
As long as you're in France.
The same reason I'll put Rooney in that squad is the same reason I'll put Carrick in that squad as well, because of the experience that they bring and the calm, cool-headedness that they bring into the side as well. I wouldn't necessarily start them, but I would take them. And the thing about Rooney is what we have to understand. A lot of people said, yeah, fair enough, he's had a lot of bad experiences with England, but he's their poster boy still. He's their poster boy still. And I mean, like you said, he's Hodgson's right-hand man. And if Hodgson thinks he can get the best out of him, that's going to do a lot for Rooney's confidence anyways.
I mean, I'm of the mindset that...
I don't know how many
more
times we do this.
I honestly don't think that...
It might be his last one. Let it be his last one.
It's not about Rooney, it's about England.
About what he brings as well,
people
surely.
People bigging up Rooney, for me, just haven't watched him
closely
enough this
season. I'm not bigging him up. I think he's been poor this season.
But you're saying you'd pick him. Bearing in mind, we know Rooney has fitness and weight issues, right?
Yeah.
He is not fit right now. This is the business end of the season. The season is done in May, right?
Yeah.
What we're going to get from Wayne Rooney, I say... between now and the end of the season, we might get 3-4 games, right? He is not fit right now. In order to get the best out of Wayne Rooney, you need a fit Wayne Rooney. And he takes ages to get fit. We've seen it time and time again. There's been so many, like Jordan's, like we're slagging off his tournament performance. Largely, a lot of those times, he's been taken because he has to go. Everyone, Rooney, and he hasn't been fit. There's been metatarsal issues. There's been so many injuries where he's been rushed. And I just feel like Roy will take him. But let me tell you, when Wayne Rooney got injured for Manchester United, given the fact all of the issues Manchester United have at the moment, I was pleased. He has been an anchor up front, right? He has not shown anywhere. Like, we've got to stop living on past performances. I love him. He's done so much for the club, right? But right now, Roy's on the cusp of taking, and I don't think England are going to win it, right? I heard people talking about it last week on the pod. Ridiculous.
I think there's a possibility they could.
I don't think they will. But what I think we have the opportunity to do this year is bring, when we're talking about people like Dele Alli, like Harry Kane, these guys are young, they're fresh, they're fearless, and they'll do a job. And I just think Wayne Rooney is not the person that people think he is. I don't think he is the influence on the dressing room.
I completely respect
that. I'm just not there with
I completely him. Respect your point. But what you guys are saying is that we should replace him with Welbeck. Yeah. I can't support. I cannot support
it's,
that.
It's not a replacement.
So what is it? Welbeck has earned his spot.
How? Because he's come back.
How long has Welbeck been out
of action this season?
Yeah, but you know what? If he was injured right now, like Wayne Rooney is, I would not be talking about Danny Welbeck.
This is a striker who's yet to hit double digits in the whole season. And you're talking about replacing him with Wayne Rooney.
I could give you three qualities right now that make Danny Welbeck earn a spot in that
Go
squad.
On.
He's quick. Don't tell me he's
Sterling.
Not quick.
Sterling's quick.
That's my next.
Lennon's quick.
Okay, that's my first Zaha's one. That's quick. My, that's my yeah, first on. One. He offers an aerial threat.
He offers a Harry Kane.
What? Harry Kane's going.
Vardy's not bad in the air.
Harry Kane's going.
Okay.
And third, and most importantly, for England, he plays
Sturridge
well.
As well.
He plays well for England.
In the qualifiers that you criticise Rooney for.
That's what I'm saying. We're talking Rooney about playing against chances. Farmers here. Well, yeah. I'm talking about going to a prestigious tournament. That's just a one-off. But who's Rooney scored against in times past?
The point is, when you're taking tournament, I think, and I'm not saying Danny Welbeck's a better player than Rooney.
He's
but
not.
I think,
he's definitely not.
I think what we're saying is, at tournament, you've got your starters, and I think Kane will probably be that guy.
He will be the starter.
But what you need is, it's not a bad thing to have somebody who can give you one position and then do a job in another, right?
Go on.
And I think the problem with Wayne Rooney is, I honestly don't think Wayne Rooney can give you
anything,
a job in any of the positions, right? You're not going to... We've stuck Wayne Rooney on the wing before. It's terrible. And Kane, I think you're saying what Rooney for Welbeck. I'm not saying that. I think it's Kane or Rooney. And for me, it's Kane.
All right.
Simple as that.
No, for me, Jordan, because Rooney wouldn't Rooney be number 10?
But is he a good number 10?
Right.
When was the last time Rooney dictated a game from number 10?
I won't judge Rooney on Man United, because every Man United player has been crap this year, to be fair.
Even last season, Marv has
been saying about Rooney being the anchor. Let's be honest. They got spanked this weekend. Rooney wasn't there. Where was the anchor? You know what I mean? they lost to Liverpool. Okay. Well, the anchor wasn't there then, was he?
Okay. We're talking about England.
That is just some trivial bullshit, right? Because at the end of the day, Rashford is a young 18-year-old player, right?
Yeah,
he is. He's coming to the squad. And he looks a million times better than this Wayne Rooney that we're talking about. I am not saying for one second that, that United are great without Wayne Rooney. What I'm trying to say is, the Wayne Rooney that you guys are championing to go to this tournament has been dead for 3 years.
All right,
he has been dead for 3 years. And when it comes to the bottom line, for me, it's not about Rooney. It's about fitness. We could be talking about any of the strikers that we've mentioned so far. If they are injured right now, we don't know how they're going to come back, there has to be a question mark. It's simply ridiculous to say somebody definitely goes when, as things currently stand, they haven't had a good season. They didn't have a good season before that, and they're lying on the treatment table. Yep. It's a trivial thing to do. Like, Roy Hodgson the problem with England managers is they too much respect. It was the same thing with trying to fit Lampard and Gerrard in the same team.
Yeah.
You got to be clinical, and you've got to say, this person's fit, this person's in form, that's why they're going, right? That's why I think Danny Drinkwater, calling him up, showed that Roy is willing to entertain stuff, right? Because Drinkwater's had a good season. He deserves to be
Have a chance.
He has. Ryan Mason, I don't know what happened.
But
there.
Listen, all right, listen.
last quick points, we've got to move on. Go on,
so for me, going back to the initial point about six strikers, I would take the four. Mm-hmm. And my four would be Vardy, Rooney, Sturridge and Kane. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I wouldn't even start two. Mm-hmm. I would start one and then you have the supporting three behind. Mm-hmm. I would probably start with Harry Kane. Mm-hmm. And if we needed to change the game, we've got Vardy on the bench.
Who's your three behind, just very quickly?
Who's my three behind?
Yeah.
As it stands, mm-hmm. I would have Ali. Mm-hmm. I would have Barkley. Mm-hmm. And I would have a fit Sterling. I don't know what it is with Lallana. I'm a big fan of Lallana, but I just think he flatters to deceive. Okay. I think he's one of those players who looks really, really pretty on the ball,
yeah,
but he's not really as effective as he should be, if that makes any sense. Yeah. I think when Barkley came on against Germany, he completely changed the game for me. A lot of people spoke about all the Spurs boys and how well Ali did. You know, he was shooting on sight. But if you watch that game closely, as soon as Barkley came on, he opened up the play.
Yeah.
A lot of the, I think the two of the goals that that were scored were initiated by Barkley. I think the one that stood out was the pass to Klein, who crossed it for Vardy, who's obviously scored. So I'll probably start with those three. Yeah, I'll probably start with those three behind.
Let's move on to our next one, guys, now. Gabriel, something I wanted to talk about a couple of months back, just got shelved for other topics. When I asked the question, do creative players have to accept that they have to do a defensive job for the team? And I asked this question because it's something that we spoke pre-Christmas about, my bugbear about number 10s not getting the numbers that I think they should be getting.
Yeah.
And that may be in part because they're being asked to do jobs that maybe just aren't out and out behind the striker, supply and score. And I remember Gary Neville on a Monday Night Football about 2 years ago talking about the Bayern Munich team that won the Champions League at Wembley about a year or two before that. And he was talking about how the modern day attackers have to be able to do a defensive job. And he pinpointed Robin and Ribery, I remember. And he was waxing lyrical about that Bayern Munich team have all this attacking talent, but Robin and Ribery, you know, if you watch them, they do a job. Do you feel the modern day attackers, number 10s and the advanced, they're not wingers, they're advanced wide men now, your Danny Welbeck's in that position, have to
come on.
Well, the three behind the one. What's his position? He's not
of
a winger.
All the examples.
That position. Yeah. Do they have to now accept that they have to now do a job going backwards? Or do creative players, should they just be left to be able to be creative?
I think in answer to your question, yes, they do need to accept. Well, 9 out of 10 of them need to accept. Unless you can be as good as Rooney, not Rooney, sorry.
Enough about Rooney.
Unless you could be as good as like Ronaldo or Messi and put up those numbers week in, week out, you're going to have to do some tracking back. And it's been shown through plenty of talented players. I think the way Man United have been set up has hampered Juan Mata, for instance. When Juan Mata was allowed to have creative freedom at Chelsea, he was our best player 2 years in a row and our best player by a landslide as well. But when Mourinho came in, he was like, well, hold on, he's your best player and he is our best player. He does create, but at the same time, does he give enough to the team? He was our best player, but I think we finished like third and sixth. You know what I mean? Did he give enough? Absolutely. Unless you can put up big numbers, big goals, big assists, then the chances are you're going to have to track back. And I think, in one sense, I think there's sometimes, like being a Chelsea man and you know, I'm a Mourinho fan, but there are some times where I feel there's some games where you could just take the shackles off and let the attacking players attack. Mm. And I think possibly with certain teams, like Mourinho teams particularly, sometimes it's taken that bit too far. You know, mm-hmm. you don't need to trap back against Blackburn in the cup. You know what I mean? you can go forward in that game. No disrespect to Blackburn, it's a part of the modern game now. Everybody's got to press. Everybody's got to work hard. Even if you look at Pep Guardiola's teams. I mean, they don't track back per se, but the pressing that they do going forward, everyone, you know, apart from Messi, everybody has to defend. They're just defending going forward in that sense. So, yeah.
Marvin, I've got some players here: Ozil, Hazard, Mata, and Silva picked out. Do you think those players that are quite clearly creative players, quite clearly gifted at supplying the front men and supplying goals, should be encouraged to do their defensive duties and join as part of a midfield three, or should they be allowed to stick to their strengths and do what they do best?
I kind of agree with what G said in regards to the fact that, you know, unless you are putting up those serious numbers, and I don't think you need to be putting up Ronaldo numbers, right? But you need, I think we've had conversations before, Jordan, in terms of that fancy Dan player, what is a good season for them in terms of goals or assists, right? And there's always, we've always had a bit of a debate about that. So for me, I think that as a team, the game's changed, right? Everybody's pressing, you know, they're starting high. And you can see, like, a lot of the times with United, when we don't press, it just allows that back line of the opposition to push you so far back towards your own goal that, you know, when you do have the ball, there's just too much real estate to make up, right? That being said, I mean, you know, when we talk about playing to the strengths, you've also sometimes not encourage somebody to expose their weaknesses, right? Mata is not a tackler. He has no pace, right? And all he's going to do is give away silly fouls if you demand too much of him. And I, you know, one of the things that we've discussed before, which is really frustrating for me, is, you know, these fullbacks now, I mean, and this is a bit off tangent, but I was playing Championship Manager with my godson, who's 9. And I was like, you got to get some fullbacks. And he filtered the fullbacks by acceleration, crossing, and finishing. And I looked at him and I thought, oh my gosh, what is wrong with the world? You know what I mean? Not tackling, you're not positioning. And the problem is, because you've got these fullbacks bombing both ways, you now have a reliance on a winger to cover their man, right? So my own personal opinion is, as a team, you've got to be willing to get stuck in and, you know, press when you need to. But I think demanding, you know, you wouldn't encourage, I don't know, like a Claude Makélélé to get into the box to finish off headers. Do you know what I mean? So sometimes you've just got to allow people to make their position their own and not ask too much of them. It's when you complicate things and you play Ashley Young up front, that's where you run into problems.
We had Akin on about a month or so ago, where we did speak a little bit about the contribution of number 10s, the modern day number 10s, and what they offer teams now and the numbers they put on the board. And we kind of widened it out to what their role is. But he made a point that kind of stuck with me, that was basically saying, why are players expected to do other people's jobs almost? Why is a player expected to now have to do, sorry, just one thing? Sorry, he was saying one particular role. Why can't a midfielder be able to supply, to tackle, to pass, to get box to box? Why are we now breaking up and segregating midfields by positions? Do you feel that's maybe a problem in terms of now asking creative players to do more than what they're supposed to do? And by the consequence of that is, they're not doing anything great. They're not supplying the numbers that we know they can do, because they're spending half the game doubling up and tracking back.
I remember I was listening to TalkSport a few weeks ago, and they were talking about the late Johan Cruyff during his managerial career. And he spoke about the importance of players knowing how to adapt in more than one position. Now, obviously, we know how much of a great player Johan Cruyff was, and we know how good he was during his playing career. But he stressed the fact that if you play on a pitch, no matter where you are, you need to know what to do. You need to know what to do. If you're a midfielder, go in defence so you know how to defend. Go up top so you know how to strike. Or if you're a defender, go in midfield so you can see the game from a different perspective. Or go up top so you can see the game from a different perspective. And for me, I think the game is developing very, very much. I think what we have now is a collective approach from many, many teams. And I can speak for my team especially. What Poch has done, especially with Eriksen, who is our main creative player. Yeah, he's our main creative player. He ensures that he plays out on the wing. And I always used to wonder why he did that. Because I kind of had this FIFA mindset that, listen, if I've got my 11 on the pitch, I'm playing my most creative striker behind Harry Kane. Do you understand? But it doesn't necessarily work like that, because what we have now is that, although people say the art of crossing has died, I don't think it has. I just think it's come from different players now, and I'm referring to the fullbacks. So what happens now, you have a lot of teams who play with inverted wingers. You don't have players playing naturally wide, or very few players who play naturally wide. A lot of the playmakers, such as Ozil, you find with Mata at Chelsea as well. Mata, when he was at Manchester United as well, Eriksen, a lot of them drift inside, and that creates space for the fullbacks. Now, it's all part of the game plan. It's all part of what managers are trying to do and trying to achieve. And the reason they do that is because a lot of the football is dominated in the midfield area. But whilst it's dominated in the midfield area, it's down to the players, the fullbacks, to find space. And that space comes on the flanks. I don't know if you realise, but a lot of the dominant play that came from Spurs against Manchester United was from Kyle Walker and Danny Rose. That's where a lot of the threat came, especially from Danny Rose on the left side, which was the area that exploited.
When you don't have the ball, yeah. do you want your creative players to have to
fill
in, or is that not their job? As a number 10, you're signing me to supply goals.
Yeah, no,
save my energy and supply goals.
Yeah, so the reason I brought that point up is because I think it's part of the game plan. Do you understand what I'm saying? When you're off the ball, it's your duty to ensure that you win that ball back. Do you understand what I'm saying? And I think what we find with a lot of these number 10s now is that they need to know how to fill in different roles. And for Eriksen, what I've realised... I think it is right. Because number one, if you're out of position, you're leaving your other players isolated, as we found on Sunday. You can't, like... What Lamella does so well for Spurs is that usually when Kyle Walker is isolated, he's a natural number 10, Lamella. He's not a wing player. He's a natural number 10. When any of our fullbacks are isolated, he tries to double up. And that's the importance of playing, being creative and knowing your defensive duties as well.
Barcelona, Arad, you mentioned them earlier on. They, under Pep, adopted the kind of like, when they lose the ball, win it back, I think in like 12 seconds.
Six seconds.
Yeah. From the top, win the ball back as high up as possible.
Yeah.
But I think you might have mentioned earlier on, you don't really see those front three really doubling up at fullback. They try and win it high up, but once it's moved into the second phase of the pitch, they've passed it on to the
because they have their zones. And
Is that what do you think that should be the way that we should do it? So the front three, once it's out of your zone, it's not your job anymore. Or do you think that what we're seeing now with more clubs is win the ball back wherever, if it's on your side, win the ball back?
Because they
tend to just let Neymar, Messi and Suarez, just you three stay up front. And I've even seen it with Leicester as well from corners.
When
they can see corners, they leave at least two on the halfway line.
Yeah.
So you guys, you just stay up there and start the attack and we'll find you.
Well, I guess...
That's the team game, everyone's got
to
chip in.
But the first thing is you've got to have players that are as good as that to justify that, and I don't think anyone's got that in the Premier League. The second thing is that would that work in the Premier League? Whereas, you know, maybe in La Liga people try to play out a bit more. Mm. In the Premier League, if you try to do that, people just hoof the ball forward and they're in with a chance. So I'm not sure it will work in the Premier League. I'd be interested to see if Pep can implement it with Man City. Mm. But overall, I think, like I said, and even if it does work, I don't think we'd have the players to in our league to execute it properly.
And I don't know if you watched the Barca, the El Clasico, Barca Real game a week or so ago, Marv. But it was interesting seeing the different styles. Whereas, as I mentioned, it looked to me like the front three of Barca were just told, do not come back over the halfway line. Try and win the ball back as high as you can, but don't cross the halfway line. Whereas Real went the opposite way. They said they really played 4-5-1, where Bale and Ronaldo really did a good defensive job for the first time on the wings, doubling up with their fullbacks. Which approach do you want to see? Do you prefer to see attacking players left to just attack, or do you feel they have to kind of come back and do their bit as part of a team unit?
I mean, for me, it's all about the quality of your players, right? And I think Barca have the ability to do that because they've got people like Busquets, who, you know, he doesn't you know, attacking isn't necessarily his thing, where he's more than willing to get stuck in and dirty. It was the same with the United squad back in the 90s with Roy Keane, right? Keane was there to get stuck in. And I think, you know, where you really can lead the strikers to it is when you have a seriously defensive-minded player or players in that in the midfield who are willing to do that, but also can play a bit, can spray it a bit, and have the ability to release them as soon as the ball has won. If you ask me what I prefer, I mean, the Barca front three are just sensational, right? I can't remember seeing anything like it.
The Real front three aren't too shabby, and they didn't take that approach.
The Real front three are the second best, right? But if you ask me to rank them, you know, I think the Barca front three, who would I rather, you know, who do I fear more playing against United? I mean, I fear everyone at the moment. I fear Michael Ricketts. Yeah, but you know what? I wanted to call you out on that because you really gave Lamella this glowing endorsement about doubling up with Kyle Walker. Lamella's shit.
No, he is.
I disagree. And the thing about Lamella, right?
I'll tell you why he's not. Number one, I think he's improved a great deal from last season.
Agreed.
And I think what he's done now is improve very much in his work rate, and he's epitomized. I was talking about this to Jordan earlier on. He's epitomized everything about a Pochettino team. I don't think he's rubbish. He found that out on Sunday. He scored, he assisted, and he also was probably our man of the match as well, apart from our fullbacks. I do agree he's not worth 30 million. I do agree with that. But we can't knock him on the fact that he has improved from the season that he came to Spurs up until now.
Yeah, an improvement I'm not doubting, right? And yes, he scored, so he's automatically phenomenal.
I never called him phenomenal. You never said that. You called him rubbish. That's what I'm calling you out.
That's a shit. And I stand by it.
I don't
and
swear.
For me, man of the match for you was Dembele.
He was
superb.
I'm done talking about Dembele.
Yeah, and Lamella missed a sitter.
Yeah, he did.
Right, and I don't know whether your views are shared by the Spurs fans, because when he missed that, I think if Harry Kane, Dele Alli, Dembele, Eriksen, anybody misses that, it'd be like, oh. But when he missed that, the Spurs fans erupted into outright abuse, where they wanted that spiky head on a stick. I don't see what you're seeing.
Going back, listen. Going back to that chance he missed, I was annoyed because I thought, you know, those sort of games, you need to be able to put your chances away, and he failed to do so. But his response was great. I mean, he got the assist and he got the goal. And that just, it's just reflective of how good he's been this season. His mentality has changed. He's not the timid Lamella that we built when he came from Roma. He's a player that's just sprung into life. I mean, he's come under Poch. Poch has obviously told him that, listen, I'm going to put an arm over you. I believe in you. I think I can get the best out of you. And he's responded to it. So I think we should give him credit where credit's due. I'm not saying he's phenomenal. I haven't said that at all. But he's gone to Manchester. He's scored against Manchester City this season. He scored against Manchester United this season, and he's doing well for himself. We can't knock that.
I think we'd agree he has improved. All right, let's move to the final topic, guys. Talk a little bit about Everton and Leighton Baines' comments.
Go on, Mark.
I can tell you're burning. So go on, quick one.
Well, I was always burning.
Jude, it's not even about what was just said there, right? It's, you know, before this season, I really like Spurs. I've been to a lot, like, because I've got friends involved in Spurs and my company is as well, I go to a lot of Spurs games, right? And as far as London clubs go, I like them, right? And you know what? Credit where it's due, a fantastic season this year, right? And, you know, he's now Poch this, Poch that, whatever. He's done a sterling job.
It's Mopo.
He's done a sterling job.
Yeah.
But for me, the Spurs fans are starting to do my head in, right? They're doing my head in because, for me, there is a spine at Spurs that is phenomenal, right? And I'm talking about Alderweireld, Lloris, Ali, Kane. They have done a fantastic job. Ali, particularly, who's come from obscurity to really pull it out. But I think that's now glossing over the fact that there is still players that if I was Poch, I would cash in on. And Lamella is one of them, right? And I can't take this level of, you know, we are, everybody's playing, blah, blah, blah. As far as I'm concerned, Eriksen has been pretty ineffective in a lot of games where he's been carried by the other players, notably the spine, right? And Danny Rose, I've got a friend who loves Danny Rose, right? I only watch the highlights of England versus Holland because people were telling me that Danny Rose is one of the worst defensive-minded fullbacks we've ever seen. And I'm not buying what these Spurs fans are telling me, where if they could pick the Premiership team of the year, there'd be about 7 or 8 Spurs players. Right. They wouldn't. Simple as that. They've been a fantastic team unit. But for me, Lamella, Eriksen, you know, there's a few of them that, you know, they could disappear and no one would know.
All right. I agree. And I've seen that I've rustled a few feathers now, but let's just put things in perspective.
let's leave it there.
We'll go to the next topic.
I mean, now he's talking about my feathers. You don't know about my feathers. I'll let you know when they're ruffled. You know what I mean?
Oh, let's move on, guys.
I take Lamella over Welbeck, but I'll leave it there. I'll leave it there.
All right, Leighton Baines. I think we've all heard of the comments that he made in an interview recently. If you haven't heard the comments, he said in an interview, this one, I'm just taking a chunk out of the interview. I just didn't feel as though the chemistry is quite there, the team on the pitch. And that has been the case for a while. We're maybe relying on individuals to come up with something too often. Martinez didn't take too kindly to those comments. I'll start with you, Ranty, on this one. Do you feel, first of all, those comments were out of order and a reflection of maybe the dressing room that is losing respect for its manager?
Personally, I think... I'm kind of split.
Do you think he's right, first of all? Do you think the chemistry...
Like I said, I'm kind of split on it. And the reason I'm split on it is because I think the timing was kind of interesting. I don't think he should have come out when he has, especially when they're still in the FA Cup. Still think they need their team to be together for that. However, I think it's quite evident to a lot of footballing fans that Everton haven't been as good as a lot of people have expected them to be. Having said that, how good are Everton though? Do you know what I mean? I mean, the teams above them at the moment are good enough. They're better than them, as far as I'm aware, as far as I'm concerned. But I think the problem at Everton is that they set their expectations so high at the beginning of the season, they've kind of fallen short of those expectations and it's got to them. I mean, the likes of Lukaku coming out and flirting with the media, saying, you know, his dad has said this, he wants to go to Bayern Munich, he wants him to go to Manchester United. Don't know if he still wants to go there now, but...
Just lots of little barbed shots, innit? I love it. You don't know what he's thinking.
That's what I said. I don't know.
No, I'm hearing what you're saying, but yeah. if you're going to just say... He won't want to go there now. I'd rather take that than this little under the radar barb shot.
You see, you're mad when he was shooting at Chelsea. Look at him.
You won't pay him. You look after mine, you look after yours.
Yeah, more to the point, I think the chemistry is definitely not there at Everton. Something's definitely off there. And a lot of people have come out and criticised Martinez, not on just this occasion alone. I mean, they've criticised him on the way he's managed John Stones. They've criticised him on Barkley. They think Barkley should be doing a lot better as well. And they think that he can be doing a lot better under better management. Mm. That remains to be seen. Am I a fan of Martinez? Not so much. So I think even when we had AVB and there was, and when he got sacked and people were linking him to Spurs, I wasn't too keen on him. Mm. And the reason I say that is because I think he's a very attacking-minded manager, but he just does not know how to defend. Mm. We saw that at Wigan. We've seen that at Everton as well. Yeah. He just does not know how to defend. I mean, I think he's tried the 3-5-2 formation with Everton before. Even with the four at the back that they have now, he's just, for me, he doesn't have a keen goal. He doesn't have, there's no real target that he wants to meet. And I think that, that's reflective of what Baines is trying to say. I don't know, was Baines Martinez manager when Baines was at Wigan? Or was he under a different management?
Good question.
I think
he might have been, yeah.
That's why I said I was split on what was said, because I don't know whether the media blown it out of proportion or he's taken a dig.
Well, I think
at Martinez.
Bringing Gabriel, I think actually he did the interview. It was Martinez that flagged it up, and basically he said, he's apologized. But do you feel that A, he said anything wrong, and B, do you feel that if he did, should have just, they're still in the cup final. Keep your mouth shut, keep in the dressing room, no need to go public on that sort of thing. Yeah. Or can we all see what he's saying? So there's no, he's not saying anything we don't know.
You're in a semi-final, Jude.
Sorry, what did I say? Cup final?
Yeah.
Sorry, semi-final.
We might play him. Yeah,
you might not as well. Yeah.
Come on, yeah, United.
After my experience this year, like, I can't condone any players breaking rank. I think you've got to toe the party line, at least until the end of the season, as people have said. In fact, you know what? They shouldn't talk at all. Like,
Lehmann is the senior pro in that squad. If he can't talk out and mention that something's going wrong here before a semi-final, where maybe they can get it together, then who can talk out and mention that?
But why are you talking to the media? Talk in the dressing room. That's where you do your talking. You don't talk in the media. I can't stand that kind of attitude in players. Oh, I'm going to go and leak this. I'm going to go and leak that.
You think it was a barb to try and...
Absolutely.
Not get him sacked, but put him under more pressure.
No, it's basically to let people know that we're not all happy with what's going on here. And as players, we're not going to take all the blame. And I've just got no respect for that. If you're a big man, if you're a senior pro, as you know, as you've kind of said he is, go up to the manager and tell him directly. Call him out, call him to one side. If it doesn't work, call him to one side. Do what apparently the United players did in the dressing room and call him out then. Have it out for real. I mean, don't get me wrong. There was a lot. I kind of going back to what was said about Martinez before. I think over the last maybe 2-3 years, there aren't many managers who have underachieved more, in my opinion. Because I actually do think he's got a squad that should be competing in a normal Premiership season. We'll be competing in the top four. And are one of many squads who have got to look at themselves as a disgrace now, bearing in mind what Leicester have done this year, right? So I think he's massively underachieved. But go speak to the manager directly. Don't go to the media and do kind of backhanded comments. I've got no time for that.
Okay, Marvin, there was a banner. I've not seen the highlights. I was away of the weekend. I've not seen the highlights of the Everton game against Watford, I think it was. There was a banner in the ground from some of the fans basically saying Martinez to go. Do you feel that was harsh, or do you feel that the fans are looking at it like, we have a great crop of players here, we're in the semi-final of FA Cup, we don't want to blow it, and we think that Martinez, even if this year he might blow it, with the money that's being brought in next season, we don't trust him to spend that money?
I mean, I agree with everything everybody said, really. I think, you know, it reminds me of, remember when they got Keys and Gray out of Sky, and I think one of them described it as, the dark forces helped get rid. I think Leighton Baines knew exactly what he was doing, right? He's not had a... Of all the players, I think he, since he returned from injury, he's been playing below par. Yeah. And I think, you know, he knows he's... Like, when we're talking about left-backs for England, people are talking about Bertrand and Rose, and he'll probably go, but...
Baines?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think he will.
He's not anywhere near. So I think he's using the Martinez pressure as a crutch to gloss over his poor performances, and I think he is adding fuel to the fire very discreetly. I think Martinez handled it badly because he tried to come across as this strong manager. I've had a word, blah blah blah. He probably should have said this is an internal matter and it's nothing to do with
you
guys.
Made it worse, do you think? Maybe
I think he has, because I think when I read the article, there was talk about, you know, Pienaar and Baines, how they had this fantastic understanding. They knew what they were doing. And the bottom line is, for me, if you need another player to make yourself look better, then you need to take a look at yourself, right? And I was really disappointed. And I agree 100% with G, right? Even people like Yapstam, right? You talk against the manager, you could find yourself at a new club. It's this player power that frustrates me because...
But isn't that the point? He maybe feels that he's in a stronger position than Martinez. In most clubs, you talk against the manager and break rank, you will be sold.
Yeah.
Whereas Baines might feel, well, if anyone's going to go, it's probably going to be you, mate.
Yeah. I think Baines does think he's got more power. And he's riding on the coattails, right? Because he knows the fact there's some discontent. Every media outlet that you watch at the moment are saying Everton are underachieving. And I actually just think he's done a brilliant job for it from a selfish point of view. That being said, you're right. He can't sell Baines, right? Baines, they don't have fantastic cover. I mean, they played Galloway there for a bit, didn't they? Or one of the youngsters. But they're not ready yet. And there is a bit of a struggle going on. But I was just generally disappointed. And I'm very much of the fact... And I always try and put myself in that position, George. So, you know, if I'm at work and my boss is just not a good boss, I'm not going to be yapping away to everyone saying, oh, he or she's rubbish, blah, blah, blah. I'd have a word. I'd sit down and say, look, I'm not happy in my role. And this is why. And I just think nowadays, you just look at the pay structure. I mean, most of the players are getting paid more than the managers as it is. And it was a sad state of affairs. That being said, Martinez needs to really take a look at himself, right? I mean, I don't think Everton have the best players. Everybody's saying, you know, they got, like, when asked, they always say, you know, they got Barkley, they got Lukaku, they got Barkley, they got Lukaku, they got Barkley, they got Lukaku. It was John Stones, and everybody, he's been a bit found out. And Martinez is getting the blame for that. But, I mean, Phil Jagielka's still bossing it. And I can't stand Phil Jagielka, right? And, you know, De La Feu's in and out. Barry's coming to the end of his... before the Lukaku signing, that was a club largely starved of investment, right? Ken Wright's pockets weren't full. And I think now they've got a new investor and stuff. Things can change. He might decide to change it. But I was, generally speaking, I just thought... Baines was bang out of line, and I think the Everton fans are going to all back him 100%. But
he knows that
from the outsiders looking in, I just think that was a sneaky move. Mm. Your manager's under pressure. That was the time to say, we've all got to take it on our shoulders and we've got to perform better as a unit. Instead, he said the chemistry, something in the atmosphere, yeah. Blatantly saying that this manager hasn't got us rocking and rolling. Mm. And I was really disappointed.
Just finally, Ranty, do you feel that he has to maybe win the cup to keep his job, or do you feel that next year he's done enough in his first year to warrant one bad season?
I think he's gone, to be honest. I think it's his last season. Whether or not they win the cup, I think Martinez will be gone. And
you think if they win the cup, they'll sack him?
Yeah, I still think they'll sack him. I still think they sack him because it's just for the simple fact that Everton are not where they should be. I mean, if you can't keep hold of your best player, who will go inevitably, and I'm talking about Lukaku anyways, because of what you can't achieve.
But yeah, sorry, hang on, let's go back on that point there. So you said that they're not achieving what they should be. They're not going to win the Premier League.
No.
They've got to win a cup. So if they win the cup...
They need to at least... I think it was two or three seasons ago, they were in the top six, and they qualified for Europa. They need to at least be qualified for European spots. At least.
You think?
Yeah, with the team that
you
they
think
have.
If you ask the owners, we'll give you 10th in the FA Cup or 6th and no cup, what would they take?
What club wouldn't take the FA Cup? But I'm talking about, if you look at the beginning of the season... Mm. What would Everton really say? Would they want a cup at the end of it, or would they want a good position at the end of it?
I think they'd want a cup.
I think they would want to finish in a strong position.
Well, you're talking from a perspective that's about all Arsenal can win, isn't it?
No. But
I think top four in a cup.
think if you're Everton.
Top four is a trophy. Yeah.
If you've been Everton, they've been in the European League for the last two or three years.
I actually agree. I mean, I remember I remember as I was growing up as a kid in primary school, and I remember Everton beating United in the FA Cup 1995, which is probably their last silverware, right?
They knocked us out.
Paul Rideout. I'll never forget that. I was devastated because that's when I was really coming of age to appreciate the severity of how football dominates my life. But, I mean, I disagree, right? I think if they win a cup, it will gloss over the cracks. If they start next season badly, pressure will immediately be on him. But if they win that cup, I think that's his get out of jail, right? And I think they've got... I think whoever wins that FA Cup semi-final, whether it be United that get through or West Ham that get through, the winner will come from that game, right? Because I don't think Watford or Crystal Palace are in great form. But that being said, I mean, Martinez is one of those people that you don't have to be a rocket scientist to know that defensively he's not strong. I think most people are saying, why doesn't he get a coach? It's like Wenger, right? The reason why I'm slightly enjoying it is because I think in his first year, he made some really bold statements like Champions League was the minimum and this, that and the other. And I love it when people get found out, right? I love it because you know what? Arrogance can kill a manager. Especially like you look at the way Rodgers went on about his business. There was a bit more, you know, humility about the way they go. Like, and I know we've talked at length about him, Jordan. Like Eddie Howe is just appreciative that he's getting what he's getting out of the players. Too many people try and take it on their own shoulders. You know, like, I found Stones. You know, I brought him up. I've made the decision to drop Howard and blah, blah, blah. It's just annoying, right? But as we said earlier, I think a cup buys him half a season.
I still think he will go. Again, that boils to the point that you just made now. I think he's made all of these promises to the Everton fan and he's failed to, you know, he's failed to back them. And I think if you follow social media, a lot of the Everton fans are against him right now. Mm. They don't want him there at the club. I think it was evident at the Watford game. It's been evident through Baines' comments. There's obviously disharmony amongst the team and the dressing room. So I think that's partly to do with the manager.
But other than Baines, who's talking?
Who wants to talk?
Well, Lukaku's talking.
Was talking before the season even kicked off. Yeah, true, you know what I mean?
True. Yeah, but he wants to go.
He's been angling. I mean, he signed a deal. He's just making it very clear that he doesn't see Everton as a massive club.
I just don't.
So
think
if I have a good season and somebody big,
a bid's coming.
Yeah, I expect to go. I don't think they can pay whatever people can.
How disrespectful is that to the club alone and to the manager? I mean, they bought him for a record fee. Yeah. And you're coming out in the middle of the season and you're saying you're practically flirting with every top European club.
My point is that a Martinez thing? But I just personally feel that Lukaku is an ambitious man. He had a good season.
He'd probably want to go even if they were top
five.
He probably would.
It doesn't matter who would be managing that. Whereas Baines has just been calculated.
Yeah. I just think it's about the mannerisms, the way
Martinez.
He's an idiot. Not just Martinez, but Lukaku as well. I mean, like, respect where respect is due. You know, Martinez has gone out of his way to ensure that, you know, you're the number one striker of the club, and you're coming out and you're giving
him 25 goals. He's done his bit.
That's
and
fine.
You're still 12th.
So that's fine. But there has to be some level of respect there as well. Okay. I wouldn't want Harry Kane coming out and saying, you know what, I've had 2 years at Spurs and, you know, I'm the highest goal scorer around. I'll think about a move outside of Europe. I'll speak to my agent. That's disrespectful.
Okay.
It's disrespectful.
And bear in mind with Lukaku as well, like, He's missed his chances as well. I mean, Everton are an attacking team, so you're going to get more chances.
He's not the finished article, in my opinion.
There's a lot of games where Everton might have won 5-3, for instance, if Lukaku had took all of his chances. Yeah. Mm. I mean, I know no striker takes every
but
single
more than, he's, than, he, but, than he takes.
Yeah, yeah, but he's missed chances as well. So he's not totally blameless. He's been their best player, but he's not totally blameless.
I agree.
After Martinez did those dance moves at Jason Derulo, I don't think he had any chance. He had any chance of coming
dance
back.
His way out of the club.
All right, I want to wrap up, Marvin. We've been down the tells for a little while, but I want to talk about Petr Cech and just very briefly and ask a question. And maybe, G, as a Chelsea fan, you may want to come on this as well. How do you think Petr Cech is feeling right now in terms of where he's at in his career? And I ask that because it looks like, well, Arsenal aren't going to win anything this season. Do you think that he regrets that move now? Looking at Chelsea, do you think he thinks, well, if I'd stayed at Chelsea, I'd have been 10th, whatever, I won nothing. But if I'd have stayed there, I'd have kept my Chelsea legacy intact. Or do you feel like he thinks, like, no, it was the right thing to still... Do you think he regrets moving to Arsenal?
I don't think so, right? I mean, you kind of have to do a rewind, Jordan. You know, back when he made the move, Jose was there. It was well known that, you know, Courtois gone, he's applied his craft in Spain or whatever, and he was going to be the guy. And I think Cech had been at Chelsea for so long and seen so many backup goalkeepers come and go. He didn't want to be that guy, right? And I don't think there's a lot of goalkeepers at Czech's age who would have the opportunity, and you've got to think about family and things like that, to go to a club that are a big club. Arsenal are a big club in Arsenal fans' eyes.
Why are you shooting at Arsenal? Just because you've been shot all day. Don't take it out on us.
Just flowing that way. Just flowing. But he's going to a club where he doesn't have to uproot his family. He's going to start. He's going to get Champions League football. And he's going to be able to continue to play at the highest level. Like, a lot of people, when they lose their position at a big club, they sort of fade and, you know, they'll go down to a lesser club or whatever. So I don't think he'll regret it. And, you know, if Peter Cech wants to know about, you know, he knows who Arsenal are as a team.
He saw this coming, is that what you're saying?
Well, he knew that he wasn't going to win the league. He knew that he was going to get Champions League. And that's what's happened. If he wanted anything more, he just got a bit arrogant, and he's been found out for that. But at the end of the day, you know, you still get to wear your Scully cap on Match of the Day, and that's all there is. I mean, in hindsight, the fact that I think G will probably say Courtois hasn't been fantastic, yeah. Jose's gone, Begovic is getting games.
He should have stayed.
Maybe, but I mean, look where Chelsea are. Yeah. I don't know if Czech would have made that much of a difference. Chelsea from back to front have been nowhere near where they were last year.
Do you think he now thinks this wasn't worth it?
Nah, you know what? I think Marv wrapped it up nicely, you know, for once. So yeah.
It's just barb, barb, barb. Yeah. Football fans barbness.
Yeah, you could never tell. I mean, at the time, Courtois' position looked solid. Everything looked rosy at Chelsea. And I think the thing is with Cech is that he wants to play and he's a natural winner. You know, he doesn't want to sit there and be second best. I remember Cech coming. I remember his wife was having a baby back home in the Czech Republic. And we were playing against Everton. It was on a Wednesday night. The archetypal game that people just miss. He came back. Yeah. He came back and played the game. Like he is a winner. I think for Chelsea, I think we've got to regret letting him go because he strengthened the rival. And I think if you look at our dressing room now, it looks so weak. We could do with him. I'd have just promised him the cup. The cup games, the Champions League games, maybe even 1 in 4 league games, just to be around. Because I think it's interesting. Felipe Luis came out today, and he kind of half criticized Jose Mourinho in saying that he felt that Jose Mourinho expects a lot of players, and maybe the players that he had in that team weren't able to deliver what he required. And I think maybe with a Petr Cech, a Drogba, a Lampard in the dressing room, some of those fractions that came about maybe get smoothed over, or maybe don't happen, you know what I mean? And I would have kept Petr Cech, and I would have loved for Petr Cech to finish his career at Chelsea. And so in that sense, I think we've got more to regret than he has.
Okay. All right, nice one. That wraps up the Football Fans podcast for this week. Thank you very much, guys. Ranty, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Excellent contribution on the FFP. Don't forget to subscribe for free via the iTunes Football Fans podcast. Check us out on the SoundCloud page of the same name. Until next week, peace.